those of you who follow or who see the live talks of myself on Vishnu Sahasranam, if you're very tuned in, you might have noticed that I skipped one name. I went from 764 to 766. That was a human error. I'll now go back and I'll now speak on Sri Vishnu Sahasranam, name 765, Sarva Shastra Brihatam Varaha. This means the best among those persons who hold weapons. Sarva means all. Shastra. Now you're all very familiar with the word Shastra, but which means scripture, but this is Shastra. This word we find in the first chapter of and other chapters of Bhagavad Gita. Shastra means scripture. Shastra means weapons. There's Shastra, Astra, there are different words for weapons. The generic term is Shastra. So Sarva Shastra, all weapons, Britam, among those who hold, and Vara, the best. So he is the best, Lord Vishnu, is the best among those persons who hold weapons, or who holds weapons. There may be someone who holds the weapons for giving to the fighter, but generally we think someone who holds weapons is a warrior. So, and it means he doesn't just hold them, he's armed. We usually say he's armed with weapons, which means he's ready to use them. Note I'm using the word he. Generally warriors are males, even up to the present day, if you know what a male is. One of those, how many genders? 300 and something. Now, the very last name in Vishnu Sahasranama is Sarva Praharanayudha, which has a very similar meaning. And I plan to give quite a long talk. I'm already planning a little bit ahead on that name, but I'll give a fairly long talk on this name also, Krishna willing. We're talking about violent God. Some people don't like that conception at all, that God can be violent. But as Srila Prabhupada would say in his strong defense of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when people were criticized, well, he has form, you have form, so why cannot he have form? If you say he's supreme, all-encompassing, absolute, and you deny him any attribute, then he doesn't fit the description of God anymore. And you're making yourself more than God. You have a girlfriend, and you say he can't have a girlfriend. You get angry and maybe sometimes violent. Why cannot he? We see that the various forms of the Lord descend in this world, and they benefit the world. That's why they come to this world. But they do so in different times and places and different kinds of situations. How they benefit the world is different in each case. If we go through the Dashavatar, we'll find some are violent, some not, and some mixed. All the Dashavatar are included in the list of 24 incarnations given in the third chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which leads up to the conclusion Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Just 24 avatars are given. There are so many, unlimited. Avataram hi asankhyayam, as stated in that chapter. They're unlimited, innumerable, exactly. Asankhyaya means literally innumerable avatars of the Supreme Lord. But among them, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is himself, directly, personally, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is borne out by Gauriya Acharyas, especially Srila Jiva Goswami in his Krishna Sandarbha. He has a whole, out of the six Sandarbhas, one is dedicated to this topic. And in Laghu Bhagavatamrita of Srila Rupa Goswami, and in all the books of Srila Prabhupada, emphasizing Krishna is the Supreme Personality, original form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And of course we have in Brahma Sanghita, Ramadi Murtishu Kalanya Mena Tishtanana Avataramakarod Bhuvaneshu Kintu Krishna Swayam Samabhavat Paramapumanyo Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Many forms, expansions of the Supreme Lord, beginning with Rama, appear, forms, Ramadi Murtishu, and they appear, they are present on the earth at different times, within the universe at different times, but Krishna is the original. So there are many forms. Some of them are very peaceful, withdrawn, others not. First of all, Canto 1, Chapter 3 tells us about the Purush incarnations. Karana Dakarshai Vishnu, Garbha Dakarshai Vishnu, and Kshira Dakarshai Vishnu. They're all peacefully sleeping. The dreaming of the Supreme Lord produces all the universes, so his dreaming is reality also. Real but not real, but not in the same way as the Mayavad. Shankara says that everything that is material is both existent and non-existent. Can you explain that, please? No, Shankara says, it's nirvachaniya. It's, you can't explain it. And of course, the Vaishnava Acharyas have had a lot of fun, almost, it seems, cutting this. That's just one of the ridiculous ideas that Shankara floats to try to substantiate his philosophy. But the dreaming of the Supreme Lord, Karana Dakarshai Vishnu, as he's dreaming, all the universes emanate from his body, the material universes emanate from his body in seed form. So are they real or are they not real? They are both real and non-real. Real in one sense and not real. Real, yes. If anyone says nothing is real, you can try a preaching technique that, to rebut them, you can try a preaching technique that Srila Prabhupada endorsed, kick them in the face with boot. You may not do it literally, but you can imagine if they say, they'll protest, no, don't worry, it's not nothing real, nothing's real, it's not real. And if they insist on going, if they insist on saying, nothing's real, just keep on kicking them in the face. That's all. Of course, you could get in prison for doing that, so it's not actually recommended, but you follow that. You follow the logic. Then Garbha Dakarshai Vishnu, Kshira Dakshai Vishnu, he also, the Kshira Dakshai Vishnu, enters not only within each atom and each heart, but he's not so passive as the others, because he is Upadeshtanu Mantacha. He's watching, but he's allowing, but he also, that means he approves of the violent actions of others. He gives We may say, oh, we're going to hear about all the weapons of Vishnu, the club, and we're going to hear about the bow, and we're going to hear about the conch, which is blown for announcing battles. Of course, it can be used for other things also, like announcing the arrival of Krishna in Dwarka. And we're going to, there's so many weapons. His sword, he has so many weapons. But nowadays we have much more advanced weapons. But Krishna within the heart gives the inspiration by which you can develop them. So don't think that descriptions of Lord Vishnu are anthropomorphic based on a primitive civilization. Don't think like that. So he's also, as Balang Balavatang Chaham, the strength of the strong, he is the best of those who hold weapons, because whoever holds weapons can only do so because the Supreme Lord gives the energy to do so. As one gets older, the strength ebbs away. And you can't even pick up something which you very easily you could pick up in your youth. You hardly can pick it up as you get older. So the ability to hold the weapon is also coming from Krishna. Now, if we go through these avatars, the four Kumaras, very peaceful. They don't hold any weapons, but they don't need to have any weapons because a Brahmana's curse is stronger than any weapon which they used against Jayan Vijay. But it's not exactly in the same way as thinking of holding a weapon. It can be taken like that. Lord Varaha. Now, there are some of the avatars who they're famous mostly just for one pastime. And I'm thinking here about Varaha, Narasimha, Parashuram. They're famous for one pastime, and that pastime involves violence, killing, weapons. Lord Bors, Lord Bors, Srila Prabhupada sometimes refers to Varaha Dev as Lord Bors. He didn't exactly hold any weapon, but his tusks and his hooves were his weapons. So violent, yes, weapons, no. Not external weapons. His own body is his, he uses. Narasimha, similarly, no weapons. Parashuram, well, that's right, his name is right there. Parashu means axe. So he was the one, Rama, who taking pleasure, and he took pleasure in killing all the Kshatriya race, the males, adults, 21 times. The Exterminator. There was a famous film, wasn't there? I know, going back a few decades, The Exterminator. I don't know what it's about or what the plot is, but I know there was a film like that. So some of the avatars of Lord Vishnu are famous specifically for violence. There are others, yes, like the four Kumaras, very peaceful. We have Narada, who's personally very peaceful, being a Brahmana, but he's an instigator of violence. Due to what he told Kamsa, Kamsa deputed his agents throughout all the towns and villages in the area for killing all the newborn children. There's some parallels with the nativity of Jesus there. I guess it wasn't that uncommon that some king would get some omen that the child is born who will kill you, and then kills all the children. Nara and Narayan, yeah, very peaceful forms of the Lord, but they come again as Krishna and Arjuna. And when we think of Krishna and Arjuna together, then we think of fighting. Yatra Yogeshvara Krishna, Yatra Partha Dhanodharaha, Tatra Shriya Vijayo Bhutya, Dhruva Nitir Matir Mama. There's niti, there's morality, there's opulence, the victory. That is what we think. Where there's Krishna, the holder of the bow. Krishna is the master of all mysticism. And Arjuna is famous as the holder of the bow. Then Kapila, peaceful. Dattatreya, peaceful. Yajna, peaceful. Rishabhdev, peaceful. Prithu is one of those who is not only known for violence, but he, as a king, he also employed violence, as is required for a king. Matsya, peaceful. Peaceful in the sense that they're not known as holding weapons or engaging in warfare. Matsya, Kurma, Dhanvantari, Vamana, peaceful but tricky. Vyasadeva, peaceful, but he endorsed the battle of Kurukshetra. He didn't advise to stop it. He could have done. If Vyas had said to stop the battle, then probably even Krishna would have followed. But Vyas didn't. Then Lord Rama, the son of Dasharath, he's peaceful, but generally by nature he's very peaceful, but don't get him upset. Don't invoke his Kshatriya nature, which is meant for protecting others from hurt. Kshatriya means one who protects others from hurt. So if someone invokes that, if someone acts against dharma, then he is duty-bound to react, and react he will in the dharmic way of a kshatriya by taking his arrows and killing you. Unless you pray for shelter, then he's willing to give it. So similarly, Balaram, Krishna, they have mixed. Sometimes they're fighting, sometimes they're not. They're always ready for a fight. Krishna's playing in the fields in Vrindavan, a demon comes, okay. He's ready for a fight anytime. Then I'll skip one and go to Kalki, who's famous only for killing. Some of them are famous, Parashuram and Kalki. These are famous only for killing. That's all they do. Mass killing. And Varaha also famous for killing, but he's also famous as the lord of the earth, the husband of the earth. Nrsimha, yes, famous for killing, but not a mass killing. He killed a lot of demons along with Hiranyakashipu, and extremely violent, but not mass killing, and not weapons, although the lion's claws can be said to be weapons, but they're not in the same way. They're not usually referred to as shastra, as weapons. We're discussing the name Sarva Shastra Britang Vara. Now, the one I didn't mention is Lord Buddha, and definitely he doesn't have any weapons in the terms of bombs, tanks, guns, swords, and so on. Lord Buddha is the emblem of all that is good in this world. Very peaceful, very wise, very concerned with the benefit of others, very renounced. He is the emblem of Shantaras. Actually, he's not in Shantaras because Shantaras is in relationship with Krishna, and Buddha denied the existence of any soul whatsoever, what to speak of God. But his whole deportment is just like that of Shantaras, peaceful, detached, and so on. But In the spiritual world, the topmost rasa is madhur rasa, that of love between Krishna and his devotees. Conjugal love. Conjugal or non-conjugal. Conjugal means, it literally means within marriage. So it means, well, to put it in the blunt language, which we don't often do because people misunderstand it, it's sexual love. But it's not just the, it, when you think of sex, then you know what we think of. But all the trappings that go with that, flirting, seducing, lovers' quarrels, and in Dwaraka, having children, raising families. Now, that's the topmost in the spiritual world, and particularly the topmost pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan are those parakiya bhave jaha brajate prachar, those which are known and propagated only in or from Vrindavan, that of the paramour love. Now, that is the worst thing in the material world from the moral standpoint. It's like a reflection. The material world is a reflection. This example is given in Bhagavad Gita at the beginning of the 15th chapter and also in the Upanishads. So this material world is like a perverse reflection in which that which is highest appears lowest. It's the worst thing one can do morally in this material world is to, of course you may say there's a Holocaust and things like that, but in terms of relationships, the worst thing one can do is to have sexual relationships with others' wives. And the best thing is to be peaceful, wise, and so on, like Lord Buddha. But then, in this spiritual existence, simply to be peaceful and not really very close to God at all. In Vrindavan, of course, the land is close to Krishna. But the Shantaras, the descriptions, as we find in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, for instance, it's practically, it's almost like in personalists. There are different levels of Shantaras. In Vrindavan, yeah, the land, the trees, there's Shantaras. Everything in Vrindavan has got a touch of, at the very least, a touch of Madhurya. So there's nothing which is not sweet in Vrindavan. So the Shantaras of Vrindavan is serving in a passive way, but it is service. But the Shantaras of, as described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, liking to study the Upanishads, doing meditation and all this kind of thing, being very concerned about the horrible seeing the horrible situation of this material world. Of course, we have to do that, but being very much enlivened by that and not particularly by descriptions of the bliss of the spiritual world. So Shantaras is the lowest in spiritual existence and it's the highest in material existence. You see, Lord Buddha, very good. But that Shantaras, then you're going to be very peaceful. Then where is God? Because God, yes, peaceful in one sense, but in the other sense, he has pastimes. And to the Shantaras, the people, they want to withdraw. You know, they're just withdrawn, not very involved. There's wisdom. There's a general sense of sarva bhuta hite rata, of being attached to uplifting others. But there's no, deliberately, among the impersonalists and the Buddhists, there's no emotional involvement with others, which binds one in this material world. But in spiritual existence, that emotional involvement, the more one gets emotionally involved with Krishna, the more one is developed. So what is considered very high Lord Buddha's spiritualism, it's not considered very high by those who are actually tattvavit, who know properly what is what. Because simply to be withdrawn doesn't satisfy Krishna. The devotees who frenziedly dance in kirtan, being absorbed in the holy names, forgetting the whole material, forgetting everything, just completely absorbed in kirtan. They may be sweating, gyrating, and people may think, well, that doesn't seem very spiritual. Not very spiritual. Now I'm remembering, in Thailand, we had a dilemma to preach there when I was there, and I'm sure it hasn't changed much. Solidly Buddhist country, and it's the Buddhism, Theravada, which is really hardcore Buddhism, and very high respect for monks, and we would dress as monks, not exactly in the Buddhist style, but with the color and the style that people could understand, we're monks. And they couldn't relate at all to us dancing and kirtan and banging instruments. They couldn't relate to it, because their idea of a monk, well, Buddha, the classic picture, Lord Buddha sitting, eyes closed, complete peaceful absorption. And that's their conception of the ideal of a spiritual person. Not that they even have a concept of spiritual, but of what it means to be. Anyway, you can't really say anything about Buddhism, because I was going to say self-realized, but they don't recognize any self to realize. And that's the problem. I mean, they may say, well, that's very good, Lord Buddha, but denies the, becomes so detached from it, so peaceful that he denies the reality of love, personal love, which is meant for Krishna. Anyway, I'm going off, but I'm sticking on the topic of Krishna. So that's the topic of Vishnu Sahasranam. Sometimes little diversions here and there, which help us to think about Krishna, consider the nature of Krishna more and more. A few names. In Canto 2, Chapter 7, are also listed more avatars of the Lord, and some of them are already given in Canto 1, Chapter 3, and some are not. So I'll give the names of some who are not. Mostly, they're all there. There are a few who are, just a few who are not. Suyagya, who we hardly know anything about. Only that one verse is there in the second canto. Prishnigarbha, who appeared to Dhruva Maharaj, Hayagriva. So who have we got? Suyagya, we don't know anything about him, but it seems to be peaceful. Prishnigarbha, there's no record of any violence with him. Hayagriva is very philosophical, concerned with the Vedas, as is Hansavatar. So they're also not violent. And Manu and Danvantari. Manu is a Kshatriya, But we don't hear about him getting involved in fights. He's a ruler. And Dhanvantari, no, he cures you from weapon injuries. So there's just a little look at that to see how some avatars are very violent, some are non-violent. And non-violent gives the idea of non-violent by commitment, but someone may be non-violent, not particularly by commitment, but they have no particular reason to be violent. Just like someone, he's going about his day-to-day business in a well-organized state, and he has no reason to get violent. There may be many people in the world who they never, apart from their eating of meat, they may not personally kill the animals, but they may not involve, they may not do any violent act in their life, cause harm, physical harm to others. They may not do it. They go to school, they're a good boy at school, and then they go to university, get a job in an office or a laboratory or something, and they live in a peaceful suburb, and they never have reason to be violent in their life, but they may not be non-violent as a principle. It's not that they are specifically committed to non-violence, but they don't cause unnecessarily any violence to others. So some of the avatars of the Lord are violent, some are non-violent, and some are according to necessity, which includes Krishna and Rama. Krishna sometimes dancing with the gopis, non-violent, sometimes killing demons, violent. Lord Rama spends years in the forest very peacefully. When the need comes to be violent, he is violent. Otherwise, most of the time, he's living very peacefully. The breakdown of the name, that I already gave, didn't I? Parashara Bhatta. He quotes some Vishnu Purana in this regard. Manusha dharma lilasya lila sa jagat pate astranyaneka rupani yad aratishu munchati. Vishnu Purana says that for Krishna it was his lila. It's like play for him to discharge weapons against his enemies. It wasn't that he was threatened or that someone could actually kill him, although we often hear about in Krishna book about demons saying, now I'll kill you, Pondraka saying, your body will be eaten by jackals, and they think like that. They're wrong. Parashara Bhatta, in keeping with his description of the current names, gives the meaning in relation to Krishna in particular, and he mentions that Krishna was the foremost among the wielders of weapons in his fight against asuras, mentioning the names of Narak and Jarasandha, and of course there were others also. And Baladev Vidyabhushan, same, gives the same meaning, except that he gives the names of Jarasandha again and Shalva. And there's so many that Krishna killed. Actually, if you take one, this is something coming from me, No. That it's not in, I don't see in the Acharya's commentaries. How you break down this name, we can say that the word Sarva, all, refers to all those who hold weapons. He's the best of them. But then we could say that he is the one who holds all weapons. And in that case, he would be the best, because there's no one else who can have all weapons. We know, for instance, that Bhima Sen, was, although he fought with other weapons also, but he was particularly known for fighting with his club. And Arjuna was particularly known for fighting with his bow, although he could fight with other weapons also. But only Krishna can have all weapons. We hear of very high-powered weapons nowadays, hypersonic missile. Well, the missile itself is not a weapon, but, well, it is, because it's carrying that which is meant to destroy those who are conceived of as the enemies. So we think these are very advanced weapons, but actually Krishna had weapons, or we know in the Vedic literature, weapons that are powered by what? What is it? How is it these hypersonic missiles that the Russians have developed? Well, how are they fueled to go so fast? How are you going to go to Mars, Mr. Elon Musk, with your, well, what kind of fuel are you going to use? You're going to have a few tankers floating behind your tankers with enough oil in it, or how are you going to fuel it? Nuclear power. How are you going to do it? Well, the Vedic weapons, the most powerful weapons are powered by mantra. Different kind of weapon altogether. Who is that? Google, they say, think outside the box. Well, this is really thinking outside the box. Weapons propelled by mantras, and extremely powerful. And also, just like the Brahmastra can destroy the whole universe. We hear there are enough atomic weapons on the earth to destroy the world several times over, but Brahmastra can destroy the whole universe. But the Brahmastra can also be used selectively according to the intent of the person who invokes the mantra to discharge it. So it can kill, it can be aimed at one person or several people or the whole universe, especially if it gets out of control. So the weapons that are being produced now, they're being produced by demons who are foolish, and they produce weapons, jagato hitaha, ugrakaramana. They perform the very bad activities of producing weapons, kshayaya, jagato hitaha, for the destruction of the whole world with no benefit, or rather the opposite. Now they're producing biological weapons. Does that really count as a, is it a weapon, or what is that? Yeah, that's now becoming standard. Of course, it was there over 100 years ago in the First World War. They first started sending mustard gas, not very advanced by modern standards, and not a very advanced way of killing people. You have to release the mustard gas at the troops in the trenches opposite you at a time when the wind is blowing from you to them. And if the wind happens to change position, then you better have your gas masks ready. biological weapons. It's something really horrible, but then weapons are horrible, aren't they? But sometimes they're needed. Krishna uses them. Biological weapons, yeah. Epidemics, they're also ordained by Krishna. He does destroy the whole universe when he wants. So, we have very modern weapons now, but in the Vedic times they're very advanced, more than anything we can dream of now. And certain people are always dreaming up new kinds of weapons, but they get the inspiration to do so. Krishna reciprocates with their demoniac intelligence. From Bhagavad Gita, Rama Shastrabritam Aham. So Shastrabrita, those who carry weapons, same words. And Krishna says, among those who bear weapons, I am Rama. In his Gita commentary, Baladev Vidyabhushan says, this must refer to Parashuram. When we think of Rama without any qualifier, we think of Rama, the son of Dasharath. Although we do find in Bhagavatam, Rama, Rama, Balaram is called, Rama, Rama, it's called out, Rama, Rama, Mahabaho, he's called out to like that. But generally, if we hear the name Rama, especially if we're talking in spiritual circles, we think that must be referring to the son of Dasharath. But here, Baladev Vidyabhushan, this verse, chapter 10, text 31, Krishna is speaking about his vibhutis, his opulences. This chapter is called the Vibhuti Yoga chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So he's talking about his opulences, not his avatars. We do have Vrishinam Vasudevo Smi, that is specific. But Baladev Vidyabhushan says that Parashuram is a Shaktyavesh avatar. He is an empowered jiva, empowered to wield weapons. Now, a major difference between the Supreme Lord holding weapons is that whatever he does is for the good of the world. Whatever the demons do, kshayayo jagato hitaha, is just for the opposite, for the non-benefit of the world. They're not thinking of the benefit of the world when they're developing these weapons. They may be thinking of the benefit of their country, which means the oligarchs and billionaires in their country mostly, because it's the poor old normal people who go out and have to fight in the wars, and they get medals. Yes, you're very good, but the money goes to the big guys who'll never send their kids for fighting. So what Krishna does when he's killing is constructive destruction. It's done for a good purpose. Sometimes it's required to destroy to develop. Just like if you want to convert. It happened many times in the history of ISKCON. Well, several times. We buy a building and then we want to convert it for use as a temple. It's not been designed like that. And we may have to destroy some of the, usually inside, we have to break down some walls and this and that. But that is constructive destruction, whereas the demons, they are destructive destruction. They become very happy, just, there's my enemy and I have killed him. So there's a very great difference. The demons, they are, demoniac. They have a very different outlook. And demons, they also decry Krishna. Oh, why is he so violent? Better be peaceful. They may support the why. You see, you have to support the minorities. And even if, this is getting a little bit political here, but there's a great outcry for Kashmir, why are you against all the Muslims? But it wasn't Muslims, there were so many Hindus living there, and because of genocide, the Hindus had to leave. But then people said, oh, you have to support the... Yeah, a little political there, but this is the kind of hypocrisy that goes on in the world. People are very liberal, support the minorities, and then we do support the minorities by being nasty to the persons who they consider are torturing the minorities. If you're a white man in America, by many people will consider you to be bad and wrong just because of that very fact. So what am I doing? I'm not talking politics here per se, but I'm just making the point that in the name of being good, because people do not have spiritual knowledge, they come to very wrong conclusions. And actually, I'll read that verse again from Bhagavad Gita, or I only read part of it. Etang drishtim avashtabhya nashtatman alpa buddhiyaha prabhavant yoga karmana kshayayo jagato hitaha. Following such conclusions, this verse follows from the previous verse, pravritting jana vritting jana janana vidura asuraha na shocham na pichacharo na satyam teshu vidyate. Not that verse, it's there's no God in control. Asatyam apratishtam te jagadahura nishvaram aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kama haitukam. They come to the conclusion, and then it's very similar to Buddhism, and there are so many different theories which are indirectly referred to in this verse. They say there's no ultimate controller of the universe. There's no universe. The universe doesn't exist. There's no basis to anything. And then, so what's going on in the world? Sex. Everything is simply produced by sex, and that's all there is to say about it. So following such conclusions, Srila Prabhupada translates this verse, the demoniac who are lost to themselves, really lost to themselves, they don't believe in any soul, Buddhists, and who have no intelligence, alpa buddhiha, very little intelligence, no intelligence, engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. So we see that people, some people may talk about being good and kind, but they have an outlook that you are the problem and they're not good to you. What's that called? That cultural Marxism and woke movement, and putting the blame. You are wrong. And then there's no discussion, there's no possible to discuss, just blame pinning. But what it actually destroys the whole of society. Now, these are very complex arguments, but the point I'm making, or I'm trying to make here, is that people who have no spiritual knowledge, even when they try to be good, they actually cause harm because they don't know what it means to be good. They don't know how to help others. They're in ignorance. They may see a problem. I'm not saying there isn't problems that the woke movement addresses. There are legitimate problems of inequities and exploitation, although there always be inequities in human society. That's another thing they can't understand. But their proposed solutions, because they're based on ignorance, they actually cause more harm than good. So they will criticize. If they hear Krishna is killing, they will criticize. But they don't realize that sometimes this is required for the benefit of human society. Some people are so bad that they themselves are violent, and they have to be stopped. Just like it's all very well to talk about peace and love, but go and do that to some terrorists. They'll laugh as they kill you. What do you do with terrorists? Well, you can try and catch them and put them in prison if you like, but often you have to kill them. Just flashed in my mind right now. I saw some years ago at Los Angeles Airport, it was in the news, one man had pulled out a gun and was indiscriminately shooting at passengers in the LAL airline. So it must have been flying to, I suppose, Tel Aviv. And he killed a few people before a security guard at the airport shot him dead, shot the attacker dead. So what do you do in such a situation? You go up to the, you could try to disarm him, but if you say you're standing 50 meters away, by the time you run up to him and try to disarm him, he may have killed another few people. Or he may kill you also. And in the attempt to disarm him during that time, he may also kill some people. And even if you say you shoot him in the leg, he may go on killing while he has a bullet in his leg. So the sure way to stop him is to kill him, which the security guard did. I don't follow these things very deeply, but I don't think there was any protest that the security guard shouldn't have done that. Now, there may be excess violence by crime prevention forces, but it's an unfortunate but straightforward thing to understand that in such a circumstance, to kill the assailant is just not just justified, but should be done for the benefit, for the overall benefit of others. Not such a difficult thing to understand. Now, Satyadeva Vashishta, those of you who are familiar with these talks will know that he gives many interpretations for the name based on the Supreme Lord's interaction with the universe, how he manifests himself within the universe and how he maintains it. Vishnu, after all, is the maintainer. So Satyadeva Vashishta asked the rhetorical question, why is he considered the best among those with weapons? And he answers it that he has equipped every living creature with the appropriate weapon for his own protection and, in some cases, for his enemy's destruction. So just like a tortoise, he's not exactly, well, it's a defensive weapon, his exoskeleton, his shell. I was saying that Nrisimha didn't have any weapons. He had his claws. Tavakara kamalabare nakam means his nails or claws. So we may say Nrisimha didn't have weapons. Well, he had weapons, but not weapons in the sense that they're crafted and designed. Not like that. Then his natural weapons, and Krishna gives those weapons to the lion, to the snake, to the mosquito. It's also his built-in weapons. The elephant has his tusks. Even the cow has her horns, which you see she often just shows her, puts her head down and shows. I just saw this morning, newborn calf. And one dog was coming a bit close to, and the cow just showed her head like this and the dog ran away. So that's her weapons. So the different animals, they have fangs, horns, proboscis in the case of a mosquito, and so on. So these are, you could say, prototypes of weapons made by men, which serve the same purpose of cutting, hacking, piercing. So there also, Krishna gives the strength by which the animals and the knowledge by which they can use their nails and claws for getting food and protecting themselves. Even it could be seen that, well, it is, it's a fact that there are earthquakes and tsunamis, epidemics. They can also be seen as his weapons of mass destruction by the Supreme Lord. Vishnu is the best of all who bears weapons because he's, another reason is that whatever weapons he uses with great mastery. He's a master of using all the weapons. The astonishing fact how Rama in 1 hour or whatever's given in Ramayana, he destroyed Kara, Dushan, and all the forces accompanying them. He's an expert in using weapons. Now, when I came across this, it just came in my mind, the term Master Blaster. If you've learned, it's a funny sounding thing, and it was a nickname that was given to Sachin Tendulkar, who I have nothing, no particular interest. I've not, unse moje kuch lena dana nahi. Nothing to do with him. Not interested in cricket. He was a great cricket batsman. Well, how do I know so much? Well, if you've lived in India all these years, you cannot but know the name of Sachin. And before him was Kapila Dev, and before him was Sunil Gavaskar. I'm not sure exactly about the chronology, but anyway, you get to hear. So one of his nicknames was Master Blaster, and that term wasn't invented for him, but it was used because batsman, you hit a cricket ball with a bat, and he got a lot of runs, and for that he was called Master Blaster. But it's really admiring someone for their ability to do something exceptional, but really missing the point that Krishna is the real Master Blaster. And if you want to praise someone and admire them for being expert in blasting, then praise Krishna. We have that propensity to want to praise someone for their exceptional ability. But there's no benefit whatsoever which comes from praising a cricket player. It doesn't benefit us in the slightest. But by praising Krishna and developing feelings for Krishna, who does something beneficial when he releases his weapons in killing the demons, whereas hitting a ball with a piece of wood, it doesn't do any real benefit to anyone. So it just makes so much more sense to divert our attention away from all these mini heroes who are portrayed as mega heroes. And again, I have nothing against Sachin, but I'm just speaking on a principle here. We should direct our attention to Krishna. That propensity to praise and admire others should be directed to Krishna. Now, Krishna, Rama, the master of all weapons, but Rama had to learn from Vishvamitra. Huh? So, you learn from your guru. Your guru must be better. How? He didn't know. Rama, he knows everything. Krishna also learned. He learned all the arts from his guru, Sandipani Muni. Previously, Vishvamitra had been a kshatriya, and he was a master of all weapons, but by teaching Lord Rama, he didn't actually teach him. He did teach him and he didn't teach him, inasmuch as Rama already knows everything, but it's the pastime of Rama, and Vishvamitra got the opportunity to serve Lord Rama in that way. And by doing so, Vishvamitra also gave the opportunity to all the various deities who preside over various weapons, just like Brahmastra is the weapon of Brahma. And we have weapons presided over by Indra, Varuna, Rudra, and others. So by instructing Rama in the use of these weapons, Vishvamitra gave an opportunity to all these demigods, more opportunity for them to serve Lord Rama. Now I'm going to read an extract from Srila Prabhupada's commentary on Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, chapter 3, text 52. Been talking about weapons and killing, and this is very much intrinsic to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his avatars in this world. There's no killing in the spiritual world. Most intrinsic to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is his sweetness. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhurja Bhagavatasa, the essence of God's godness is his sweetness. There's also a saying, Madhurena Samapet. One should finish sweetly. So let's finish with a sweet statement about the weapons of one of the Lord. Sweet weapons? Who ever heard of sweet weapons? Okay, listen in. Reading from Srila Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita commentary. In other descents, the Lord sometimes uses weapons to defeat the demoniac, but in this age, the Lord subdues them with his all-attractive figure as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Jiva Goswami describes that his beauty is his astra, or weapon, to subdue the demons. His beauty is his weapon. So we can finish this talk by meditating on the beauty of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's described. So many descriptions of his beauty are given. One brief description I always like to carry in my mind, in description by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that his body is quivering, charane nupura bai, preme dhala dhala shonara anga. His golden body is trembling in bliss as his ankle bells chime as he's dancing. His whole body is decorated. We had that already. Chandanangadi, his body is decorated with sandalwood paste, his long flowing hair, tears of love decorating his eyes. white, pavitra in his household life, his brahmana thread. This is the beauty of Lord Chaitanya, can conquer the hearts even of demons like myself. Yes, I come from a very demoniac background, and by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, I can say that even among all the umpteen contaminations within my heart, somewhere there is planted a seed of attraction for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His beauty is his weapon to subdue the demons. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya ivacha patita nam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nithaya chunakang padayo nipatya kritva chakakushatameta daham ravimi. Hey sadhava sakala eva vihaya durat gauranga chandra charane kurutanu ragaha. Parivadatu jano yata tata va nanumukaro navayang navicharyamaha. Hari rasa madira madati mata bhuvi vilutama natama nirvishama. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.